you make your choices, and life is full of choices, and you end up where you end up.
Willkommen im Career Club, dem Podcast über berufliche Entwicklung, mutige Entscheidungen und persönliche Wendepunkte. Ich bin Julia Carstens, Beraterin für berufliche Veränderung und Entwicklung. Im Career Club Podcast spreche ich mit Menschen, die ihren eigenen Weg gehen, manchmal geplant und oft überraschend. Wir reden über Sinn, Selbstbestimmung, Krisen, Neuanfänge und darüber, was es braucht, um den eigenen Platz im Berufsleben zu finden oder neu zu gestalten. Ob du selbst gerade etwas verändern willst oder einfach neugierig auf echte Geschichten und neue Perspektiven bist, hier bist du richtig. Schön, dass du da bist. Heute habe ich die Ehre, mit einer echten Institution der internationalen Finanzwelt zu sprechen, Charles Enoch. Über 4 Jahrzehnte hat Charles globale Wirtschafts- und Finanzpolitik mitgestaltet, auf höchster Ebene. Als stellvertretender Direktor beim Internationalen Währungsfonds war er an entscheidenden wirtschaftspolitischen Prozessen beteiligt. Als Senior Advisor bei der Bank of England gestaltete er mit, wie moderne Zentralbankpolitik heute aussieht. Und als Fellow am European Studies Center in Oxford prägt er bis heute die wirtschaftspolitische Debatte mit tiefem Wissen, Weitblick und messerscharfer Analyse. Sein Weg führte ihn von Cambridge über Princeton bis an die entscheidenden Schaltstellen der internationalen Finanzarchitektur. Er hat unzählige Länder bei der Stabilisierung ihrer Wirtschaft beraten, Krisen analysiert, Reformprozesse begleitet und Generationen von Ökonomen und Entscheidungsträgern inspiriert. Charles versteht Deutsch, antwortet aber lieber auf Englisch. Das Gespräch wird also bilingual. Welcome to the Career Club, Charles. What an honor to have you here.
Thank you very much for inviting me and for putting these exaggerated claims as to what I have been doing.
Charles, du hast in Cambridge und später in Princeton studiert, absolute Spitzenuniversitäten. Was hat dich überhaupt dazu gebracht, Wirtschaftswissenschaften dort zu studieren?
I actually got into Cambridge to study history. And I had 10 months before starting university and I traveled around America. Uh-huh. And America, it was all exciting and met a lot of people, uh-huh. and therefore thought maybe I should do economics. And also in Cambridge, where the college I went to, King's, was very famous for economics, as John Maynard Keynes College and other famous. Uh-huh. So I thought I want to be really where the leadership had been in economics. So I wrote to them and said, please, can I do economics? It seemed more relevant than history. And they let me do it. And I didn't change.
Also einfach nur, weil es relevanter war? Wenn du sagst, dein persönliches Interesse war vorher Geschichte, ist das ja schon ein großer Wandel.
No, sometimes not. Sometimes they come together. If you don't know the history, you can't do the economics right. And the same with the other things. In some ways, they are dependent on each other. And you do sometimes find people who are economists who know nothing of history. In the other way around, people talk their history stuff. So in a sense, it's not too different. And in a way, what I was doing was bringing the two aspects together.
Und wie lange hattest du vorher Geschichte studiert, bevor du den Wechsel gemacht
well,
hast?
At school, in English, in England, the high schools are much more specialized than in Germany or in America.
Yeah.
And from age 16, you're only studying 3 subjects. And you do that to A level, 3 or 4 subjects. And so mm-hmm. I had studied then history, mathematics, politics, economics
yeah.
for the last 2 or 3 years at high school. And that's more intensively than one normally does at high school.
Okay.
And basically very good teachers in both subjects.
Und da hattest du auch schon so diesen Einblick natürlich. Also es war nicht, dass du komplett fern von der Wirtschaft warst, sondern da hattest du eigentlich schon...
It was all leading up. I mean, that's the background for bringing it. I mean, for economics, you need a lot of mathematics and the history. So it was really very much geared for it. And in a sense, the English system in that way was good. For some things, it's not so good. But that sort of specialization and funneling you into your specialist subject worked very well.
Und Charles, sag mir, als du dann gewechselt hast, gab es einen Moment, wo du gesagt hast, ah, hier bin ich richtig? Gab es für dich so einen prägenden Moment, wo du gedacht hast, ja, das ist es?
Yeah, I enjoyed it from day one. I mean, it was from day one. There were. I mean, also partly my colleagues, my friends. I mean, they're still friends from the college. There were maybe 12 people doing economics. Several of which I still see very regularly. And maybe it was the college was very much into economics and the university was into economics and history, a bit of a backwater for that place. But it was a very exciting time to be doing economics and I was learning a lot and about the current situation.
Yeah. Sag mir mal, wie war das überhaupt, an diesen Institutionen zu lernen? Also viele wünschen sich das, das sind absolute Elite-Universitäten. Was hat dich dort am meisten geprägt?
I was very, very lucky to go there and very happy to go there. A lot of English schools try and send their better pupils to Cambridge and Oxford. I mean, all my three children, they rebelled and they all went to Oxford, not Cambridge.
Yeah.
But it's really, it's those two universities. And if you're at one, you can't name the other one. It's the other place, the other place.
Ah, okay, okay.
So it's always there. So this is a rivalry, which maybe is archaic.
Mm.
But what they do have a particular form of instruction, which even when I went to America and went around American colleges with my daughter and looking at American mm-hmm. colleges, we went to some of them and they said, we teach the Oxford system. To which she said, well, if they have the Oxford system, I go to Oxford, which she did do.
Yeah.
But the Oxford system is a way that you have your lectures. But in addition to your lectures, you have your supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a one-on-one, two-on-one or three-on-one maximum once a week with every paper which you're studying. The whole, your whole work, the lectures you go, some people never went to lectures if they had mm-hmm. other things to do. But your supervision was essential and you would see, you know, and those are the people one remembers. I mean, maybe you remember your good lectures, but there's 100 people there. So what?
Yeah.
Can read it in a book. But the one-on-one and the dialogue, and you have to explain yourself. You will write an essay. So again, you learn to write, which the English system is very much on writing essays. You write an essay. You're meant to leave it, you know, a day before for the tutor, and then they've read it or you read it to them.
Yeah.
And then you dialogue. So you have to explain what you're doing. So it's much more interactive. And you have some quite well-known people supervise. It's not just a lecture at the very front with 100 people and you maybe ask a question.
Yeah.
This really is a quite, you know, intimate discussion.
Und das machen Sie mit jedem Studenten?
Yeah.
Ach, okay.
Everyone. And again, the American universities, they sort of say, we guarantee one of your courses will do this. You know, hey, you know, you don't have to guarantee or be first in line or queue up at midnight or whatever, what these people did. But this would be the standard thing. And it's on, except the top professors don't do it, but the others who are well-known established people, mm-hmm. they will be supervising their students. And that's what you do every, you know, I do these five papers. Here are my supervisor for the five papers.
Yeah.
And it's very much interactive and it means you actually do it. I mean, if you don't turn up to a lecture and you have no exams for 3 months, you sleep through it. But if you've got to see the guy on Monday, you know, by Sunday night, you've not done it. You start writing and that's how, you know, so it keeps you going. And probably all your friends there, you know, you're 12 people doing economics, you're all writing the same essay. So, you know, you discuss with them.
Yeah.
So it's very stimulating and you do learn a lot. But the actual work you're doing for your exams and for your degrees really comes from the one. And that's where Oxford and Cambridge are different from anywhere. It's very expensive for them to do it. And they...
Das macht es auch so aus dann.
It makes it difficult. And whether they continue to do it or whatever, it is hard for them in this day and age. But, you know, maybe instead of getting one-on-one, you have one-on-two or one-on-three. But certainly that is what their essence is and what they do definitely try to maintain.
Ja, Wahnsinn. Ich wusste gar nicht, dass das so intensiv ist einfach. Mm. Aber das macht natürlich einen Riesenunterschied zu allen anderen Universitäten.
Ja, ja.
Wie ging es dann für dich weiter nach dem Studium? Wie hast du dann eigentlich den Weg zur Zentralbank? Hast du gesagt, ich schreibe jetzt eine Bewerbung, los geht's und dann haben sie dich genommen?
I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I sat one Christmas or somewhere in a library
mm-hmm.
and I wrote to everybody I could think of and I had a book of careers and wrote to 10, 15, 20. And some said yes, some no. And the Bank mm-hmm. of England said, well, next time you're here for Christmas, or, I mean, it was Christmas,
mm-hmm.
come by and we'll show you around the buildings. And so I wrote, 2 days before Christmas, and they said, yes, come in tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I turned up in my jeans and everything. And it was a full interview panel. Mm-hmm. And it was, a panel from the morning and the afternoon, three very prominent economists. And after that, I mean, I hadn't realized and applied, but they wrote to me and said, you want to come and work here?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, who needs the labor market? I have mm-hmm. a job here, you can start.
Und welche Position war das?
The Bank of England only just started having economists.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was the same in Europe. It may have been mm-hmm. similar.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had an economic intelligence department. Mm-hmm. And they said economics and intelligence, ha, 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 they don't go together. And then they had a special studies unit. But there were really only maybe four or five economists there. They're all my age. And gradually, they had just recruited very top economists at the top. And so gradually the economists came into the center. But it was like university. It was like the seminars, there were overall maybe, a dozen of us again, and we presented our papers and we discussed amongst them. And we had some very good teachers there. There's a guy called Charles Goodhart, who is still writing, and was possibly the best boss I ever had, because he was just so self-confident. He was from Eton, so if you go to Eton, but he was he is a very famous monetary economist, and working for him in the monetary department, he's so self-confident, he would sort of at a big conference, he would say da-da-da-da, and I don't understand this in bit, but Charles Enoch's working on this, and da-da-da, and so, and just to refer, when you're a junior person doing some academic thing, that very few professors do that. They're all far too insecure and they want to just get it for themselves. But he, and that was, again, it was very motivating. And again, friends from there, again, the friendships around there were very important. And so central banking is a profession, if anyone is interested. It's a very exciting profession. It's a very bonding profession. Long after I'd left the Bank of England, went to Sierra Leone or whatever, the guy said, oh, yeah, I'm at the Bank of Sierra Leone. I said, Bank of England. And that was much more impressive for them and more bonding than I'm from the IMF. From the IMF, it's a different relationship. But yeah, come from the Bank of England. It's a particular profession. And there's only one central bank in a country. Yeah. And so your colleagues are often from other countries. And so it's an international environment, and there is learning which goes on about how good central banking is.
Yeah.
And that was and is quite exciting.
Wie hast du den Transit von der Universität dann in einen Job geschafft? Hattest du da überhaupt das Gefühl, dass da so ein großer Transit stattgefunden hat von der Theorie in die Praxis? Wie war das da für dich? Warst du weiterhin sehr auch in theoretischen Analysen bei der Bank of England? Wie kann man sich das vorstellen als Außenstehender?
Yeah, I think from the economics I'd done to the central banking, the transition was not so difficult because my colleagues were people who'd also been maybe one or two or three years before doing the economics. And economics is always applied. And there were papers from Cambridge, from Princeton, which was applying economics. Yeah. So you're doing the same subjects which you'd been doing before.
Yeah.
And in the Bank of England, they want to know the theoretical bit. I mean, that's, the two things blend.
Yeah.
And you'll find that many economists, most, spend time in academia or in research institutes as well as on the practical side, if they're working, whatever, in the EU Commission or in the central bank, because it reinforces each other.
Mm.
And also your colleagues will understand the same language when you're talking about, but so-and-so wrote this paper.
Yeah.
They say, yes, so we must do that. And certainly monetary economics is very much being developed at the universities and then applied in the college. And I had again, good friends, showed me the things I hadn't done. So how you write a computer program and how you analyze the computer programs and you work on it collaborative. And it was a very collaborative. And one thing which I would say for a career thing is I find it important to have a profession.
Yeah.
Which you can apply without the bosses being too involved, and certainly no politicians anywhere near you.
Yeah.
And secondly, that you have a collegial role amongst your colleagues.
Was dich auch gesamt weiter nach vorne bringt.
Yeah.
So, ne?
Yeah. Which you have. Yeah, I mean, at Bank of England, it was all seminar. And I think somewhere like the IMF, to go forward, the IMF, because you have to be very, very careful, you have the right answer. All your stuff is reviewed by somebody else and reviewed by somebody else. And you can't have an ego if somebody crosses this out and puts something else. And the final thing may or may not have your signature on. But you need the collaboration because, four eyes are better than two and six better than four.
Yeah.
And you need to be working with these people in order to have any final product. I mean, they say it's bureaucratic. Yeah, but you need more than one person to actually get it right.
Yeah, klar. Und du hast dich ja so super wohl gefühlt auch bei der Bank of England. Also ich sehe, dass du, wenn du davon berichtest, immer noch freudig darüber erzählst. Wie kam es dann, dass du gesagt hast, okay, ich möchte jetzt aber doch zum Internationalen Währungsfonds? Haben sie dich rekrutiert und du hast gesagt, hey, ich habe Lust auf noch eine neue Herausforderung, oder wie kam es dazu?
I mean, yes, I'm very nice. I'm happy with my Bank of England time. The colleagues were largely good. The bosses, some were very good, some were very bad. And so that's a mixture, but that I think happens. And that's a downside to come of the central banking, there's only one. If you work in a commercial bank, you don't like your boss, you go across the road to another one. You know, mm-hmm. So that's whatever it was. You don't like Deutsche Bank, okay, you go to Commerzbank or whatever.
Yeah.
Which in your central bank, you know, you have to change country or change profession or something. So no, to come back to your point, basically I was sent there. There's a 3-year period then, and then I came back to the Bank of England. And then thereafter, when the IMF was International Monetary Fund was 50 years old, it decided it needed to have a monetary department. And so they thought of which people they knew recently who did monetary. And so basically they invited me to come over. And Bank of England was not necessarily terribly happy, but I went over and then I stayed there.
Okay. Also hat sich das dann so ergeben einfach auf dem Weg.
Yeah.
Vielleicht kannst du unseren HörerInnen mal erläutern, was waren so deine Aufgabenbereiche dann beim Internationalen Währungsfonds?
Yeah, the IMF is divided into area departments and functional departments. Mm-hmm. So you can be a specialist in Latin America and you'll go around Brazil and whatever, or you can be a specialist in a subject, which is, I think there's the monetary, there's fiscal tax, I mean, there's statistics, and there's also the legal side. So there's basically 3 or 4 areas. And so I was on the monetary side most of my time. In a career, you switch normally between a monetary and an area. And I finished off in Western Hemisphere dealing with the Latin American countries. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's with monetary. And there's the IMF has 4 things, if I can remember, one of which is surveillance. So every country has to subject itself once a year to an IMF team coming by and assessing its policies and making recommendations. Mm-hmm. The second one is technical assistance. You go to countries and you help them. They say, please help us at my central bank. The third one is use of fund resources, mm-hmm. which is what's in the newspapers, which is a minority thing. Normally, that the country has no money, like Greece, we need to have money. You're in the mm-hmm. emergency ward, in comes the IMF, and we lend money if you do this and the other.
Okay.
And then there's a fourth one. But those are the three main. So I mainly did the technical assistance going mm-hmm. around the world to countries which said, we need a central bank, we haven't got one, it doesn't work. I did some of the surveillance. I was in Indonesia for 2 years during the crisis, working very closely with the people who are firstly choosing the policies and B, conditions under which they lent money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically it. But a bit of time also on the statistics side, mm-hmm. which is also to bring country statistics up to international standards. Oh, the fourth one. So yeah, the fourth one, which subject is really developing and giving assistance and assessing standards.
Okay.
So everything, the world system has followed certain standards. There are statistical standards. So mm-hmm. if you say that our product grew by this amount, then it must mean something.
Mm-hmm.
Or monetary goes so. And so statistical, the main ones are the banking standards, which is very important with a crisis. Every mm-hmm. bank must have so and so much capital. And there's committees which set this up. And then you monitor it and you tell, you know, and you assess the banks whether they have enough capital. And
okay.
So that's the fourth one, which I also did quite a bit of that, of the standard setting.
Okay, und das heißt, du hast dir das System erstmal angeguckt, was ist vorhanden, was fehlt noch und in jeglichen Hinsichten eigentlich, um das zu stabilisieren.
Exactly.
Und ist es eigentlich jedem Land gewährleistet, die Hilfe vom Internationalen Währungsfonds? Also, oder welchem Land wird geholfen?
Yeah, it's voluntary unless you need to borrow from the IMF.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, if you don't need to borrow and say, I think Germany has never borrowed. In Western Hemisphere, only one country has never borrowed, which is Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So otherwise, mostly countries have good times, bad times. England had a bad time. In 1976, just as I was in the Bank of England, we had to borrow,
mm-hmm.
which actually impressed a lot of countries when I went into other countries who were in trouble. I said, yes, I know it. We had the Bank of England. We hated it. They tell you, the IMF comes in, they tell you what to do. They say you don't do it. It's like a bank manager. You don't do it, you don't get money. So, and there are ways of doing it, and it's sometimes criticized.
Dann kanntest du auch die Seite einfach, ne? Wie es dann wirklich der Ablauf ist, wenn man, also ist ja auch gut, die andere Seite mal kennenzulernen.
Absolutely. So I saw the other side, and there's a lot of critiques of what happens. And I found when I got to Oxford, there's a lot of people criticizing it, some of which is valid, but some of which is hey, you know, Greece was in trouble. You know, had you not had the IMF, it would have defaulted and it would have been much worse. And so, and the IMF checks what it's done. It makes mistakes, but some of it was good. And some of the things, I mean, the country which I was overall most involved in was Indonesia.
Yeah.
At the end of the Suharto regime. And it's the first time they actually managed a transition without killing millions of people.
Mm.
And they got to democracy and they modernized. And Indonesia has been growing at 6% per annum for 20 years and on and on and on. But you know, there was a lot of work. I mean, there was a huge teams were there. Mm. And what's also, we were very popular. There were, you know, students on the street saying IMF, IMF, because they didn't like their own corrupt leadership. So, and often the countries are in trouble because their countries are corrupt.
Yeah.
And whatever it is, the IMF says, yeah, you are corrupt, but, you know, it'll cost you, but this is what you must do. So I don't want to over-defend the IMF, but it's quite complicated at some point.
War es aber nicht auch sehr kompliziert, wie du gerade schon die Situation auch beschreibst, in diesen politischen Lagen auch zu agieren, das aufzubauen? Bist du da nicht auch teilweise in so ja, Grenzsituationen auch gekommen?
Yeah, the nicest, I always say the nicest jobs are in your middle management, not the senior ones.
Yeah.
And it's the nicest to work on middle countries because the politicians don't care.
Mm.
And if you come to work on the real big ones, I mean, if you work on America, which I never really did, I mean, it's just a pain because nobody lets you write anything because the US Treasury is there and on and on and on. And so, you know, for any professional, whether it's, you know, an economist or a doctor or a lawyer, you want to run your profession.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, if there's politicians around, they make trouble. And, you know, at its best, the politicians defer to you. I mean, the whole idea of the central bank, and it's extreme here in Europe, the Bundesbank and the European Central Bank, they're independent. The politicians have nichts zu sagen. And that's enforced. That makes it probably a joy to work in.
Mm.
And there are good reasons for it. And in many of these, it's not just the economics institutions, but many of the institutions are self-standing. And that's because they wish to give legal basis for the experts, quote unquote, to actually run the, you know, run that rather than have politicians playing around with it. So even you found, like even in Indonesia, it was the economists, the technocrats who would run, which made it quite exciting for what was happening.
Ja, weil du einfach auch so am Puls warst natürlich. Ne? Yeah. Du hattest viel Handlungsmöglichkeiten auch. Hast du eine Anekdote aus der Zeit oder eine Situation, die dir bis heute im Kopf geblieben ist?
Yeah, many, 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 but you don't have enough days to do this. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, Tanzania, my first one. Your first one is always your first love.
Yeah.
And so Tanzania was the first country I went to. And there's two bits. Tanzania was formed by Tanganyika and Zanzibar.
Yeah.
And it was sort of an emergency marriage because everyone thought Zanzibar had the revolution and become Chinese. And we went in there really to blend the countries.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. But the bit I remember was we had to set up a treasury bill market.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, one knows what treasury bills are when the government borrows.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody would lend to Tanzania for fairly good reasons. And also, if you're in Germany or somewhere, it's all done on the screen. It's all internet. Now, there's a problem if you have no electricity. And so you design the thing for them, which is, hey, you put in your bid in a little box. In the front, you have to walk, you know, all the brokers and the bankers and anyone wants to borrow, wants to lend to the government.
Yeah.
You put your bid in a little box in the front of the central bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that works because, you know, the capital's very small and nobody would lend them for more than 30 days. So it's just a box for 30 days and then 91 days. And that was okay. And it worked and you showed them how they do it and they understand it. And then I came back about 3 years later. And one of the young people, oh, Mr. Charles, look at all your babies. And they still had the boxes and they were now went up to 2 years because people would lend them up to 2 years. So it was, yeah, the market had worked. You can start with, yeah, you don't need electricity. You can do it with little boxes and people of paper.
Yeah.
And that's how you adapt it. And, you know, as people are confident that you pay them back after 1 month, they lend 3 months and now they get up to 2 years. And now it's like anyone else. You can borrow 20 years or somewhere from them. So that's quite exciting to have that.
Sehr gut, aber auch süß gesagt, so, ne? Das alles so Kinder bekommen. Aber gab es eigentlich auch Momente, wo du so ein richtiges Druckgefühl hattest? Also ich meine, deine Entscheidung oder deine Arbeit hat ja auch makroökonomische Folgen, sag ich mal.
Ja, die...
Gab es Situationen, wo du...
Ja, oh. The Indonesia, which overall was good. I mean, it's very, very tense throughout. Yeah. And we had good colleagues in the finance ministry and the central bank and so on. Yeah, we had problems because the main counterpart was cleverer than any of us, was a retired Air Force general, mm-hmm. Ginanja, head of the... And he was trying to use it. What was happening in Indonesia was nearly everything was bankrupt. Most of the banks were bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And we had the accountants from Australia, from all the big firms, doing an assessment of every single bank. And they had said, these are okay, these are hopeless, you know, close them. And these say, they'll be okay if you get government money.
Mm-hmm.
And this Ginanja said, I want to use this for populism, for my populist outcomes.
Yeah.
And the main thing in Indonesia was populism of the local people against the Chinese. And the previous government, on the previous change, Suharto in the 80s, they killed 1 million Chinese. And so we had then Ginanja try to get us to not, ours were purely technical. This is the numbers shows this, shows.
Yeah.
But it showed really that I think some of the banks which would get money would be Chinese owned banks, and some of these which would not were Pribumi, indigenous.
Yeah.
And by Chinese, it means bankers whose great great grandparents came from China. It's not that they'd come yesterday. And so you have this division there. And interestingly, I mean, the team was divided. I mean, my team were absolutely, we wanted nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they said, go to the central bank and do a list of who are Chinese and who are not Chinese. And our Asian department, so we working in parallel, the area department, who are always, as many diplomats, much closer to the country they're in than to their home country, said, oh, we must do what the country wants, we must do. And it was a standoff, really. And in the end, one of my team just basically said, look, gave them the computer and said, you do with it. And we left. And I phoned my then boss and said, look, what's happening? And he gave me the best advice I ever had from anybody. And he's also he's still a friend. He became the governor of Bank of Sweden. I mean, but he said, yeah, Charles, look, in a crisis, you haven't a clue. Nobody knows what to do. But look, the thing is, imagine in 2 years' time, you're in front of a tribunal and you have to explain it. What do you want to have to say? He said, and if you think you need to come home, come home. Normally, all the bosses support their staff because the staff do in the field get into, you know,
in den Konflikt auch, ne? Oder teilweise in Konfliktsituationen
Exactly. Conflict, and you can be pretty sure that your bosses will support you.
Yeah.
And there's lots of cases where a finance minister or president will phone up the managing director and say, this is terrible, Mr. X is here, or Ms. X is here, and, you know, we can't discuss with them. And the managing director will support, will say, that is our person, he's my representative, I will, you know. And I think there's very few cases I can't recall any, where, you know, somebody was withdrawn because the country objected to them.
Was hat dich in dieser Zeit immer wieder motiviert, auch neu motiviert, gerade wenn man vielleicht auch so in schwierigen Zeiten war, in so schwierigen Phasen, kommt man ja wahrscheinlich auch ein bisschen niedergeschlagen wieder nach Hause, oder wie hast du dich wieder motiviert?
It's sometimes it is hard. I mean, sometimes you prefer to be at home. I mean, the IMF is very extreme in that it may say, right, you go, and, you know, you be Monday morning, you be there. And there are some in some areas of the poor people working on Greece who would have the, you know, the coffer in the office in case they were told.
Ach so, dass sie immer wieder
it's always there, which is problematic. I think it has changed now. Yeah, there were a couple of times when, especially there was a terrible, terrible counterpart in Indonesia early on, a person called Hubert Nice, who was not nice, but he was covering his own back and using us to cover his back. It was endless stuff. You know, if Enoch and Roulier are not in Indonesia by Monday, then I can't say what the consequences are. This is nonsense. And normally, but it just was irritating.
Yeah.
But you have that stuff. But the question was, what keeps you motivated? Yeah. I think the motivation is because, you know, everyone will support you against him. You have the rogue bosses. And, you know, except under one rogue boss who now fortunately sits in jail, Rodrigo Rato, who should have been in jail before he came. But he was a serious problem. Wow. The IMF has had problematic bosses for various reasons. But he was a politician. Everyone else is not a politician. He did not support his staff. Mm-hmm. But you would go there because you know you're supporting the staff.
Yeah.
You're supported by the bosses, and you would mm-hmm. come back and they say, yes, we understand this. And the country would basically support it as well. And mm-hmm. you're doing, you know, they would come and say, hey, we appreciate it so much and thank you for coming. And why have you worked so hard and the yeah. rest of it? And I mean, one example is actually Nigeria, where I work quite a bit, and it's a horrible place to work. It's mm-hmm. very hard conditions. You can't go out of the hotel and it's hot and, you know, and there's no air conditioning and the numbers don't add up and so on. So everyone is fed up and your main thing is to... And then we went to the finance minister, mm-hmm. Ngozi Eguela, mm-hmm. open brackets, now the head of the World Trade Organization, you know, not a coincidence, close brackets. And she would keep, you know, the final meeting, present the report. And you're on for 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And you're sitting there 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 10 o'clock. And, you know, she comes out at 10 o'clock at night and says, I'm so sorry I've kept you, Charles. This is so terrible. I'm sorry. But now let's do it. And, you know, and she's been working because she's been, you know, she's running the country.
Yeah.
And she would come out and say, thank you so much. You must realize we're doing all this. And she motivates you. And this is a great report. It's going to help us. And mm-hmm. and at the end, everyone would have signed up. Can I be your long-term advisor? I mean, really, the motivation from this lady on, you know, that this is why we're helping in Nigeria. And she would say, I have the problem with the parliament. I have the problem with this. But with your report, we can do this and we can do that. And that's what
das
it is.
Das gibt so ein seliges Gefühl
huge,
auch,
huge,
ne?
Huge, so, huge, yeah. huge. The whole yeah. team, because everyone's cross and you know, but yeah. then you've got this and wow. So, you know, everyone signs up. Can I come next time, please?
Yeah.
That was good.
Das gibt einem irgendwie so den Push auch immer wieder nach yeah. vorne. Oder da zieht man sich auch im Nachgang immer wieder, yeah. denkt man dran und das yeah. bringt einen immer weiter nach vorne. In deinen ganzen Jahren, wie hast du beruflich die Entscheidung häufig getroffen? Ist das immer so eine Mischung aus Kopf, Bauch und Daten? Wie hast du meistens die Entscheidung getroffen?
Probably badly. I mean, you always have these, choices. Somewhere like the IMF, there's different departments and there's different yeah. things you can say to bosses and you can shift and you could do this and the other. I mean, it worked out better than some ways. And, you know, there's certain other things one wishes one had maybe done differently. You go with your gut feel and what you think you want to do and what the constraints are. And
also hast du schon immer dein Bauchgefühl mit auf dem Weg?
Yeah. And sometimes you just miss a thing when, you know, somebody said you want to do this. I don't know. Sorry, next place. And should have just said, you know, there's certain times you just say yes, you know, yes, I'll sort it out later. So it's a couple. I mean, there's always some missed opportunities which might have gone better or worse.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's whatever Bauchgefühl. I mean, it's what it ultimately is.
You, yeah.
There's no way if you can do a, you know, this is it, this is the other one, because you don't know, it's all uncertain. You're doing everything with uncertainty.
Ja, manchmal denkt man ja irgendwie, man in der Wirtschaft oder so Zahlen fokussiert auch vielleicht arbeitet, dass man dann so das Bauchgefühl nicht mehr hat oder irgendwie so auf den Weg lässt, dass man irgendwie nur noch ganz analytisch vorgeht. Und deswegen interessiert mich eigentlich.
It's random and it's chance and this happened to happen and there was this person wanted this gap. And it was just entirely, and some things have nothing whatever to do with you. And you make your choices and life is full of choices and you end up where you end up.
Yeah. Charles, du arbeitest da auch wieder an der Universität als Fellow, ist das richtig?
Yeah, that's come to an end now. That was 5 years after retirement. I went to Oxford.
Yeah.
And that was partly because a friend of mine on retirement had got some money from some consulting work and put his money. So we had a mini think tank.
Okay.
And that was fabulous. It's a nice complement in working in a university mm-hmm. to working on the practical side. Because the practical side is never enough time to do everything. You're just one thing and then, I've just finished, now I can sort it. No, do that now. So you're always rushing.
Eigentlich immer so hinterher.
And here, hey, this is what I want to do. And so I had the chance and it's, everyone lives in a silo.
Und man müsste eigentlich die beiden zusammenkriegen oder den Austausch dahin genau. Kriegen. Charles, wenn ein junger Mensch mit einem großen wirtschaftlichen Interesse oder vielleicht auch ein Wirtschaftsstudium noch in der Tasche schon, aber nicht weiß, wo er irgendwie als nächstes ansetzen soll, was würdest du so jemandem raten?
First, if you are into economics, you get the paper qualifications. They know, certainly a master's. I mean, you know, your first degree, obviously. Yeah. You do a master's degree, ideally a doctorate. Mm. You go through most of it's fun. You meet more university colleagues, you do it. No one can take it from you. You'll have it. It's there for your whole career if you have a doctorate. And that's fantastic. And the big institutions look then at, these are the doctorates we only really basically recruit. So the second order where you do it, but having a doctorate is really good, ideally on the subject. If you know what you want to do whatever, you're interested in fishing, then do a doctorate in fishing and you're the world expert in fishing or something. But
diese Nische meinst du einfach niche, zu finden.
You get a niche and in my area, sort of deposit insurance is a great niche because people need that. So, you find a niche, you have your doctorate on the niche, you're there, you maybe do an internship in the place, if you know where it is. Then you do choose, do you want to be national or international? And it's pluses or minuses because international, you're away from your family. You may have a spouse who may have to give up a career or you need to work out two spouses together, which can be done, but is complicated. And you look at the international situation and maybe not everybody wishes to live in America at the moment. And maybe the IMF is, World Bank may be under threat at the moment, which hopefully doesn't last very long. Or even if it does, if the IMF moves to China, then okay, good. I want to go and live in China. But you have to look at the world and what's happening.
Yeah.
And, it can be, but I think it's a paper qualification, doing internships and aligning your interest with what the institution does. I mean, the IMF recruits two types of people. They recruit, and I think most of them are the same things, which are at an introduction, they have a young professional or young economist, World Bank, all the institutions are like that. And so then you come in straight from your studiums. You do your PhD or before you finish your PhD. Mm-hmm. Some of them have not because, and then you apply there. The other thing is a mid-career, which is you've done 15 years in the Bundesbank.
Yeah.
Or you're a lawyer who's worked on the clients for 15 years and you come in as a mid-career as a specialist. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, pluses and minuses. It is doable on those things. The other thing you need to look at is diversity considerations because the organizations more or less, and it may change, they may be purely technical neutral.
Okay.
They may not be. The IMF is more technically neutral than others. Mm-hmm. And others, they give priority to certain underrepresented groups, which can help you. But if you're a German, Germans may be underrepresented. I mean, it's not always how you think. I mean, some of the organizations only recruit people from sponsoring countries. And there you may find, if you're talking to Germans, that they have sponsored, I think the World Health, I may be wrong, but it's something like some of the organizations everybody is a member, such as the IMF, World Bank. Others, there are countries who have sponsored particular facilities. And therefore, you go through very carefully. If you want to go international, you go through very carefully. Have the Germans paid for this at the FAO in Rome? And it may be that the whole thing, I mean, there are various things are sponsored by three or four countries. And therefore, you have a better chance to get in if you're from those countries.
Also, dass man sich da einfach irgendwie auch in die Tiefe informiert, welche Möglichkeiten man dann einfach hat.
Genau.
Charles, ich frage immer gerne alle meine Gäste am Ende, ein Satz, der dich in deinem Leben geprägt hat, das kann beruflich, privat sein, der dich immer irgendwie begleitet hat.
This is a difficult question. Yeah. Let's leave the most difficult for last. No, I mean, I think it's probably the one, I mean, it's not the whole life, it only happens. Yeah, it's the one I got from Stefan in the crisis there. Assume you've got to explain yourself, which I think is what it is. I mean, you're doing what you want to do. I mean, A, when you look back in the past, A, are you pleased with what you've done?
Yeah.
And B, you know, can you tell everyone, I did this because I did this? And probably I could think of my father's ones at some time, but he had always, unpassend ist, whatever it is, zum unpassenden Moment. So it was always totally inappropriate. Unpassend ist Kommentator, unpassend ist Moment. So that he was, whatever, probably things which one would not repeat or whatever. Yeah. So, but yeah, my Großvater said, so bleib wie du bist, which is also is a nice one.
That's my Oma.
Yes, always. That's always, that's probably the nicest one of all, is bleib wie du bist.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. Don't change what you are. I mean, that's who you are. If they don't like you, you know, that's it. So I think that's where it is for everyone to do what they want to do and be who they are and do something they enjoy and, you know, make good friends there and do something which gets you to have friends where you're not fighting everyone in, you know, it's not a constant battle of competition or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we should do.
Charles, vielen, vielen Dank, dass du dir die Zeit genommen hast, dass du hier warst. Das war mir eine große Ehre und weiterhin alles Gute.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Das war der Career Club Podcast, der zeigt, wie vielfältig berufliche Wege sein können. Vielleicht hast du heute etwas gehört, das dich inspiriert, nachdenklich gemacht oder bestärkt hat in dem, was du tust oder tun möchtest. Wenn dir die Folge gefallen hat, freue ich mich, wenn du sie weiterempfiehlst, teilst oder den Podcast abonnierst. Und wenn du mehr über meine Arbeit als Beraterin erfahren möchtest, weil du selbst gerade in einer beruflichen Veränderung steckst oder einfach neugierig bist, findest du alle Infos auf career-club.de oder bei Instagram unter Hello Career Club. Danke, dass du zugehört hast. Bis zur nächsten Folge im Career Club Podcast.